Hey guys, and welcome back to the Paper Courts Podcast. I am your host, Travis Mawerder, and this is the third episode of the podcast. We've almost been doing this thing for a month, so I appreciate all of you guys for the listens, for the feedback, for the nice reviews on iTunes. If you haven't done so, I'd appreciate it if you did. If not, and you just want to listen, that is fine too. Thank you again to the guests that I've had on the show. John Drake led us off as our guinea pig guest, and then Mike Brunsting followed up as guest number two. And today, for guest number three, we have Mr. Billy Allen. He's an AVP champion and a longtime player on the AVP Tour. He recently just started playing on the FIVB Tour with Theo Bruner, and this year he will be partnering up with Stafford Slick. Now, but before we get to the interview with Billy Allen, I want to thank our sponsors for the podcast, Bulldog Beach Volleyball. It's a volleyball club located in Navarre Beach, Florida, which is actually where I learned how to play volleyball. And they recently just dropped a clothing line called Bad Boy Volleyball. They are $25 for a shirt, $25 for a hat. And the best deal of all is that if you hit up my man Judd Smith, he will actually pay for your shipping. He is the owner, founder, and CEO of Bulldog and Bad Boy Volleyball Club, and he's trying to get the word out, so I highly recommend you look it up on Facebook at Bulldog Beach Volleyball Club and get yourself some gear. Now, on to my interview with Billy Allen. Now, Billy Allen is an AVP champion. He won this year in Seattle with Theo Bruner, and he didn't have a minute to celebrate. He had to run and catch a plane to Germany, where he played in his first FIVB and had to beat an Olympic Russian team just to make the main draw. Billy will talk about that experience later in the podcast. One thing you should know about Billy Allen, too, is that he has a podcast of his own with John Mayer, another AVP champion, and Andrew Fuller. It's called Coach Your Brains Out, and it is a look at volleyball from the coach's side. And they get advice from guests like Karch Karai, perhaps you've heard of him, Mike Dodd, Jake Gibb, you name it. If you are a coach or just have an interest in volleyball, I highly recommend it. It's a great listen. I listen to it every day on the way into work, or at least when I haven't binged on all of them already, and I'm looking forward to the next one. Where we're going to start with Billy is at his career at Cal State Northridge, where he roomed with the very guy trying to beat him out for the setting position. And whether you know it or not, his roommate was actually Ty Trambley, who was his first partner on the AVP Tour.
Yeah, we were came in both setters the same year. So we were roommates freshman year. And then competed against each other the whole time. And indoor, we'd be like fighting for position, and unfortunately, he usually won out. We also, like, all year long, we'd play beach, and we were the only two guys that were, like, really good at beach, or were, I don't know, put the time in. And so off the volleyball court, after battling indoor, we would always play together, and every summer we played a bunch of CVAs, and then our senior year, we qualified for our first AVP tournament together in Huntington.
Who was blocking?
We actually split block back then. I know it's funny to think about because we're both smaller, him especially. But yeah, back then the CBVAs, it was big court still, so we would just jump serve as hard as we can and split block. And then for that AVP, we didn't even think twice about it. Like, he'd be up there trying to block Lambert and stuff.
And I mean, when you guys played in that first qualifier, so I guess it would have been during the summer of your senior year.
Right, so we just graduated. We were like, we'd won a bunch of like AAAs, and so this was kind of like the next step.
Right. Were you expecting to qualify?
No, not at all. I was just turned off by the high entry fee at the time, and then it kind of said, hey, Ty was kind of gung ho to do it. So we went, and I think we had a pretty good draw. I think somebody might have like either lost or got hurt on the other side of the bracket, and we ended up qualifying, and then obviously going in as the last seed and getting just crushed by everybody in the main draw. And then it was funny, is our second tournament, we kind of just did the California one, so that was Huntington, and then we did Manhattan later in the year. And so the second tournament, I was like, oh, I showed up like with my cooler full of food and like umbrellas and walked down to the beach, and we lost our first game. I had to like walk everything back up to my car unopened.
And now what did you major in at Northridge?
English, creative writing.
Okay. Now, have you put that to use yet, or has that been kind of on the back burner?
I put it to use a lot as a hobby in a non-monetary way. So I used to do a bunch of videos. I would write. I write like, I don't know, write fiction stuff on the side for fun. I'm still pretty involved in, but nothing that's ever like turned into anything.
Right. So when you graduated Northridge, did you have plans on what you wanted your career path to be? Because I know a lot of indoor guys will come out of college and go straight overseas to play indoor. But it looks like you played a little bit of beach. I guess what was your plan coming out of Northridge with just life? Did you want volleyball still in it? Did you want to kind of get a standard job?
Yeah, I never thought volleyball was realistic. I wasn't that great of a player. I mean, I was never like in the mix indoor as far as like an All-American that was going to go play overseas to get money. And so I played beach kind of just for fun that first year. And I actually didn't play the whole next year because it was expensive. And the idea of like playing on the AVP and traveling, like going to New York and Florida, that sounded kind of crazy to spend all that money on airfare and hotels and stuff. And like I got a little taste of it, and I don't know, maybe I wasn't confident enough, but I just kind of went into actually that next year I got an internship, or I worked as a page at Paramount, and so I kind of wanted to get into, I obviously had that interest on the creative side, and I want to get into movie business a little bit, so I didn't do any volleyball that whole next year, and then I ended up getting a coaching job somewhere, because I still was kind of around volleyball in that way, but not as a player, and eventually in Santa Monica, I was playing some fours for fun, and some guy was like, hey, you're pretty good. We're playing a tournament, and he kind of kept just pestering me, and we ended up, he talked me into doing it again, and kind of, I think we didn't qualify in Santa Barbara, but then we qualified the next time in Huntington, and he also, like, this was John Mesko, sorry. John Mesko, okay. And then he kind of pushed me to, like, travel a little bit, so he kind of talked me into going to Chicago, and once I kind of, I don't know, got on the road and made it happen, made that commitment, then that's when it kind of became a little more realistic. And it never was, I don't know, it was, again, I think my goals were always pretty small and attainable. And so the idea of like, oh, traveling and maybe breaking even, that would be awesome. And it's kind of crazy that at this point, I don't know, to kind of be where I am now, like kind of permanently in the main draw and like winning a tournament and having some success. I never like thought that was going to happen when I first got out of college.
Right. And so I guess in that 2006 season and Mesko brought you back out onto the beach, were you trying to have a kind of a work beach volleyball balance? Because I know that that's one of the biggest struggles that players have, is just balancing how much do I work and make money and try to, you know, stay afloat, and how much do I train and play beach volleyball and kind of chase this dream?
Yeah, definitely had the balance. And what happens, I was like, in my mind, and this happens to a lot of guys, you're coaching or whatever your odd job is in order to pay for your, like, your beach volleyball hobby. But then the work gets in the way, too, because you can't go to certain tournaments. You're, you know, like, you're coaching club, and then their season conflicts with your season, and so it's definitely a tough balance. And I mean, if you do your best, but if you put volleyball first and you really want to get after it, then you have to kind of be a bad employee on the other side to a certain extent.
Right. And you know, I know that first year when you were traveling a little bit, was there a point, because I know that you didn't make all of them. I know you made a handful. It was kind of like half and half, I guess. And was there a point where you were like, Chicago's kind of far, New York's kind of far, we've missed two in a row, or you know, missed the last one or two. Do I really want to do this? Was there doubt creeping in that this was kind of the wisest decision to make?
Yeah, for sure. And I'd kind of like, I don't know, live a semi-sheltered childhood. The idea of just flying across the country was new to me in general, let alone like by myself to go play volleyball. I feel like I got lucky enough to have partners that were older than me that had been doing it, and so they kind of didn't even think twice about it, so I kind of just fell into step with them as, oh, this is just what you do. And so both him and then AJ Mahalik, my next partner, they were kind of already on that path or financially able to do that, so I think if I was playing with another guy like myself, I probably would have talked myself out of it because of the cost and the return on investment. But you know, having guys that were already involved in the lifestyle, that I think definitely helped. And then you find, I don't know, you can kind of, the ideal gets a little sweeter when you, you know, find a free place to stay. We definitely got creative with some of the lodging, some of the tournaments.
And that's one thing that I always kind of laugh at. Just, you know, the few times that I've traveled around too, you know, you just kind of find a couch, a floor.
Yeah.
So was there always interesting, just kind of like lodging and flying and just like eating situations that you found yourself in?
Oh yeah, I mean, it was like, and to my detriment, you know, you'd save a couple bucks by, you know, sleeping on the floor at some place, but then you play bad in the tournament because you slept on the beach that night or whatever the situation was, or you went to some party and just like stayed until morning. So
you kind of made the not necessarily a full time commitment because I don't, you know, the ADP. I don't think there's enough money to call it a full-time commitment, but at what point were you like, okay, this is something that I'm definitely going to take very seriously and, you know, kind of put the writing, you know, and Paramount on the back burner a little bit, and beach volleyball is now my priority?
Yeah, I think it was when I played with Brady Halverson, who was probably the partner I played the most tournaments with. I think we were going into a season where we were like training hard, and I'd had some success qualifying off and on, and maybe winning a game or two. And then so I was playing with this guy Brady, who's about my age, and you know, really athletic. And we were, you know, had a whole off season of working hard, training together. So we were fired up. And we actually hit a roadblock that first tournament. We didn't qualify, and so it was kind of like, oh crap. And he had kind of an injury, and we kind of jumped partners around for a little bit that year after that. But then we got back together, and we got a ninth, beating some good teams, which was my best finish. And I think from there, that kind of, like, got us in a point where we were in the main draw the rest of the time. Might have had to qualify one more time. So I think once the success happened, and just knowing that you're in the main draw, like, that just makes that flight so much easier to buy when you know for sure that you're at least going to be able to break even. And I think that point, playing with him and having some success, is when we kind of said, hey, let's do every event there is.
And, I mean, just how nice is that feeling, too, knowing that you are in main draw? You know, you kind of alluded to it when you said, I'm not as scared to buy this plane ticket, because even if we just go, you know, lose our first few matches and we're out, we still kind of break even. But just mentally and physically, too, because you don't have to waste that much energy playing in the qualifier. How nice is it not to worry about playing in the qualifier?
Yeah, I mean, the qualifier is stressful. I mean, I don't care how good you are, single elimination and the pressure of, like, making zero money and losing all these points if you have a bad finish is intense. I've seen some really good players and teams go in the qualifier that you're like, oh, for sure, they'll qualify, and, you know, it doesn't happen. So there's always a risk there. But, you know, it's part of the game, and I think, you know, those moments where you do qualify, or you're in that high-pressure situation where you have so much riding on it, especially if it's at a non-California tournament where you travel to, you know, those are also probably the best moments too.
Right.
That night where you qualify, then you show up to, like, the technical meeting with everybody else, and you, like, you know, hey, I'm one of these guys.
Uh-huh. And so how, if we rewind a little bit, how did you end up meeting your wife? And to kind of follow up on that, how nice is it to have, you know, a wife who played or plays volleyball, who kind of understands, you know, what you're trying to do and what you're going through?
Yeah, I mean, it's great. We met in Florida, I think, in 2007. Just kind of like, you know, obviously it's a tight community, and the guys and girls play together for the same tournament, same venue. So, I mean, immediately I was like, oh, who's this? Because she was, like, really hot and stuff. and then, like, every tournament, I don't know, kind of got a little closer to, you know, having conversations with. And I was single, she was single, both semi-nice people. And so a lot of players are trying to, like, point us in the right direction at each other. And then, you know, eventually, you know, she talked to me now here on a date and all that stuff. But as far as like having that, like, I don't know, we had a few years where we'd compete together and travel around the country together. And I mean, just to be able to share that with somebody that, you know, that you love, I don't know, it's definitely special. And even now, like, she went to every AVP this year. She was in every main draw. We actually had our kid that came to every single event as a 6-month-year-old and stuff. And I think, I don't know, sometimes I think about if we both had real jobs, like what the trade-off would be. And, you know, I would never trade having, like, a little bit nicer of a car or a nicer place for, like, all the, the memories and adventures kind of we had.
And when did you guys have your kid? I guess did you guys have to have a discussion? Because I know for, you know, for women, that would kind of at the very least put the beach volleyball dream on hold for a little bit.
Yeah, so she took actually 2 years off because she was coaching college up in Washington, and then we had her kid catch last November, so a year ago, and then she was gonna. We weren't sure how we were going to make it work. She was just going to kind of maybe come watch me play. But then it was like, hey, like while you're there, you might as well sign up and play. And she ended up having a good partner. And she played, I think she got a fifth in that first event in New Orleans. And that kind of locked her in for the rest of the year in the main draw. And so it was actually nice because we both were getting, you know, 2 guaranteed paychecks every time we traveled, which was nice. And then our first event, we took the kid and we were definitely in over our heads because we didn't have any help. So there would be times where we, unfortunately, like, we both did pretty well. So we were both playing at the same time a lot. And so literally I was, like, handing him off to strangers while I was warming up. And, I mean, luckily the volleyball community was pretty, like, close. So I could be like, hey, Baumgren, you look like nice guys. Can you, like, watch him for, like, 10 minutes and stuff like that? And then after that, we ended up bringing, like, a mom or a sister at every event to kind of help out.
That's awesome. Seems like it's been working out pretty well.
Yeah.
And did that, you know, did having catch, because I know that, you know, starting a family and everything, obviously your priorities will change. Did that, how much did that change your priorities and just kind of how much time you had dedicated to beach versus, you know, man, I would rather be at home hanging out with my kid.
Yeah, the big priority has been the big change has been the scheduling. It just gets so much tougher. We haven't had any kind of daycare or babysitter stuff, so one of us is always with them. So before I would just, anytime anybody asked me to play, I would be, yeah, let's do it. And now I have to kind of like map it out a little bit better. And we kind of had to do it where Janelle would practice at like 7 in the morning, and then I would show up at 9 and kind of do the trade-off, and then I would practice like 9 to 11. And so just got juggling the schedule got a lot tougher. I used to be able to go into the gym whenever I wanted, and now it has to be, you know, we bought a little weight set for the garage, which I sneak in during his naps. And it's just a lot tougher to kind of manage that, where before, other than some side coaching jobs, they can kind of practice as much as I want. So now you definitely have to make, be a little smarter about your training.
Right, for sure. And now you mentioned, you know, when you started getting into main draws that it's nice having that guaranteed paycheck. So I guess how scary was it when in 2010, you know, the second half of the AVP is canceled, you know, because the AVP goes bankrupt, and then 2011 is, you know, called off entirely. So what was that like when you found out, you know, that news that, you know, the AVP is going under, and did you have to kind of reevaluate what kind of career path you were about to take?
Yeah, it was definitely a bummer. I think about that point, I was just so into volleyball that it didn't matter. I would have been playing no matter what. So it was just been like, oh, I guess back to the CBVA tour. So I know a lot of people like Watch Vogel and some other guys that are around my age dropped out around that time. For me, like luckily enough at the time, I didn't have to make too much money without a kid and stuff. So, I mean, I was never making, you know, great money playing, so not having the tour, you just had to coach a little bit more and live with roommates. but then, I don't know, I definitely had this thing of like, crap, like we just are definitely playing volleyball at the wrong time. If we'd been playing 10, 15 years earlier, maybe hopefully 10 or 15 years later, we could have actually been making some good money. So we just kind of felt like, I don't know, we timed the whole thing wrong. But then as it came back, like even when it was like only three tournaments or four tournaments, you were, I don't know, just grateful to have that. So it was never like, I don't know, it was definitely disappointing, but we're definitely grateful because that something was coming back at least, because there was nothing else I wanted to do at that point other than play volleyball.
Right. And I know that the NVL kind of took the AVP bankruptcy and used that to start itself. And I know that you had some success on the NVL. I know the first one in Baltimore, I know that you made the finals with Prosser. So how nice is it to have a different tour just kind of pop up too?
Yeah, we were hoping something would take its place. We played the NVL, we played Coronas. When the Cuervo came out, we played that. It's nice having the AVP being a semi-substantial tour, but at the time we were, you know, playing anything we could get. We were kind of lucky to have the freedom to, you know, play whatever events we wanted. We were definitely grateful for the NVL and the Corona and the Cuervo and any tours that were going to pay us money to do what we loved, because we were going to do it anyways.
And when the AVP started coming back, I know that 2012 was kind of like a soft opening with two events. Mm-hmm. Did you guys know that when I was talking to John Mayer, he said that when it came back, you know, he wasn't drinking the holy water yet. You know, he still had some hesitation whether to dive back in to the AVP. Was there any hesitation on your end over, you know, should I just go with the NVL because the AVP kind of burned us, or were you just so excited to have the AVP back that it was just kind of a no-brainer?
No, there's definitely hesitation, and I think Brady, who I was playing with at the time, had kind of a sponsorship that was tied to the NVL too, so he was kind of thinking this might make more sense financially to play with them, because we could do well, and you know, he would have some sort of sponsor option too. But once you know, the top players in the country started signing up for the AVP, and you kind of knew that's where the best of volleyball was going to be. That was kind of the decision maker.
Okay.
So, you know, you want to be able to play against the best players in the country. And so we all followed Todd and Phil in that.
Right. That makes sense. And now in 2013, you had to play in the qualifier again in the AVP. How weird was that after spending so much time on main draw and having a very successful career and almost winning an NVL? You know, how weird was it going back into, you know, I got to qualify?
Oh, yeah. Okay, so that one pissed us off because Brady and I were actually – so coming in, the AVP had a new season, and they actually gave two wild cards and three force majeures. And so Brady and I went from the fifth seed into the qualifier because all these players passed us through different routes. Like, they'd sign up with players that were no longer playing just to use their points and kind of some shady stuff. So, yeah, it sucked. It was kind of a surprise to us because we've been doing well and, you know, we're ranked pretty high. So we actually had to qualify again for the first time. And, again, it's even worse when you're, like, you've been out of the qualifier for a long time as far as the pressure, because now you're supposed to win. And, you know, it's more like embarrassing if you don't qualify. So it's a little different and harder mindset. But, you know, we got through it and, you know, beat some good teams or whatever. And then we actually jumped back up to the five seed once we got into the main draw. So that was definitely kind of a weird,
that's a big
weird
jump.
Tournament. Yeah. And then last year, actually, 2015, I think, yeah, last year I actually had to play in the qualifier for the last event because it was a team points thing. And I'd switched over to Rob Page for, like, last two events. We didn't have enough points as a team. And it's the same thing. Like, you know, I had to play in the qualifier with Rob. And we went three twice. Like, in the game to get in, we barely made it in. So the qualifier's tough. I definitely have a lot of respect for guys that battle through that. Yeah, so we barely made it through. And then we ended up getting a fifth in the tournament. Like, I mean, like everybody's good out there. I think the guys' side is pretty deep. So it's there's no easy road.
How much does that speak to just the level in the qualifier? Like, that you could come out and get fifth, and I think that was, like, the fourth time that year that you had finished fifth place.
Yeah.
And you came out of the qualifier. So just how crazy is it that a team that can come out of the qualifier, and then McCulloch and Rafu did it this year too, that you guys come out and beat really good teams and make a good run at it?
Yeah, I mean, I think, especially on the guys' side, like, everybody's really physical. And I look at the qualifier, and there's guys that, you know, do stuff I can't do as far as, you know, bouncing the ball or being fast. And so I feel like everybody's really capable physically. It's just, you know, a matter of consistency at that point. And, you know, one guy's put it together, even for a day playing well, like, you know, everybody's dangerous.
Right. And I think that the AVP kind of keeping it 16-team draws definitely keeps the level of play in the qualifiers high. And I know that there are mixed opinions on it. I know that John, he likes the 16-team draws because he says, you know, you should have to be really good to make it to a qualifier in the main draw. And other guys, you know, I was talking to Matt Olson, he said, you know, I really liked it when we had, you know, 24, 32-team draws. So what's your take on the size of a draw? Should it kind of stay at 16 and force it to be an uber high level? Or do you think that they should open it up a little more, which might encourage some players to go out and try their hand at it because they might have a better shot?
I like the bigger tournament. It feels more like a tournament. Sometimes with 16 teams, especially if you stay in the winner's bracket, you're playing one match a day. And, you know, that just doesn't feel like the grind of a tournament to me. I mean, it's nice if you're in this top 16 and you're in the winner's bracket. But, I don't know, I would say looking at the field, like, I wouldn't say that teams outside the top 16 are weak. I would say that it'll be a strong tournament, you know, with 24 teams or, you know, potentially 32 if it's, you know, in a California stop. So, I mean, I like the idea of a bigger team, especially because, you know, as a fan and an athlete, you get to see different matchups where I feel like sometimes with 16 teams, it's tough to move around and you play the same guys all the time. It's kind of nice to see some different matchups with the bigger draw.
Right.
Have you played? What do you think about the 16-team tournament?
I know that when it's a 16-team draw, I know that a lot of guys are much more hesitant to travel, and I think that you saw evidence of that in Chicago, which had a massive qualifier because it was a 24-team draw. They might get it anyway, even if it was 16. You know, Chicago is a popular stop, but if you look at the tournaments that have the bigger draws, the numbers are huge. And so I think if they opened it up to like a 24, it wouldn't be the worst idea. But I think also with that 16 team, that there is that extra kind of sense of satisfaction that, you know, I just beat some really legit teams. Because if it's a 16 team draw, you know, this year you'd have to beat Loomis and Ratledge or the McKibbins or, you know, Chase and Princeton. You'd have to beat someone really legit.
Yeah. And I can see back when I was starting, if it was a 16 team draw, I could see that being a turnoff, and you know, who knows if I would have kind of pursued it and been playing volleyball.
Rewind a little bit back to 2014. You had played with Brady forever, and then Trevor Crabb had just started coming up and playing pretty well on tour. So how did take me through how that partnership formed?
Yeah, I think I had like two or three seasons where I was doing everything I could to get rid of Brady. never happened. He'd keep kind of barely playing, and I'd kind of be stuck with partner options, so I'd have to go back to him. And even though he was getting fat and not training, I had to keep playing with him because he was the best option. and then eventually, through the EDP, kind of like a little training block that I kind of went to some practices, I met Trevor, and I thought he was okay. Kind of a smaller blocker, and he kind of talked me into playing in some Norseca qualifier with him that we ended up winning and beating a lot of good teams, and he was way better in a tournament than he was in practice, and I think that's still kind of the case where he'll step it up and play better when the kind of the pressure's on, and maybe a little lazy in practice, but we ended up doing well in qualifying for some Norsecas, and I was actually talking to Prosser about playing again, and he was a big blocker. He was established. He'd been, you know, had some good, you know, obviously some good finishes. And then I was kind of like, shoot, well, I don't know, Prosser was kind of on the way out as far as his, I don't know, interest and dedication, and then Trevor was pretty hungry, and Trevor and I were already set to play some Norsecas, so kind of just decided to go with the young guy instead, and I don't know. At the time, it was definitely felt like a riskier choice, but we did did great right away. Like Trevor was balling, with a fifth in I think Salt Lake City with our first event. And then we got a third later that year, and he was getting served a lot because he was kind of a young guy that nobody knew, and he was siding out, you know, as well as he does now. And, you know, we had some really good finishes. So I was definitely happy to, I don't know, take that gamble. I think it definitely paid off for me.
What is it that makes Trevor so good? You know, because by blocking standards, he's not that big, right? You know, he's not Dahlhauser mm-hmm. or Daugherty. And when I was talking to Jake Gibb, and he goes, when Trevor started coming on tour, I didn't think he would be that good just because, you know, physically, he's not your stereotypical, you know, humongous blocker. So what is it that makes Trevor so good on the beach?
Yeah, I think, it definitely always comes back to side out. I mean, you can give up points by not getting blocked if you're siding out every time you're making up for that. And he has great vision. He's, you know, he grew up playing the game, and it shows. He does so many little small things like pulling and digging and, you know, making good plays, and he's a great setter, and little things that just a tall guy might not make. And, you know, he sneaks and gets some blocks here and there. So it's not like he's not a good blocker, but he's definitely not the imposing blocker that, you know, a Gibb would be. And I think kind of a little like Jake, he's kind of got a little bit of that, I don't know, that nasty killer instinct side where he turns it on and he wants to beat guys. I think that goes a long way too.
And then this year, so you ended up playing with Theo, and you guys were great, and you got your first win in Seattle, which congratulations, by the way.
Thanks.
And so just how liberating and vindicating was it? I just kind of take me through the Seattle experience. You know, you had been kind of a mainstay on the AVP tour for a long time. And then Seattle, you come out, and, you know, it was a really good tournament, and you end up beating the Crabs in the finals. So just take me through that whole experience. And had it just been a long time coming that you know, you finally got that win under your belt?
No, you know, it's funny that it didn't feel like that either. I remember after we won, I kept getting all these, like, Facebook messages and, like, finally, long overdue, congratulations and stuff. And I never thought, like, I was, like, deserving to be winning tournaments all these years, you know, and I just had never done it. It felt to me like, oh, no, you know, Todd Rogers, that's the guy that wins tournaments, not me. I was always kind of, like, you know, like, I don't know, I saw myself more of, you know, getting to the semi was like a great tournament for me. And obviously with the Olympic year, there was some weaker tournaments, there was like some top teams missing. And so the door was kind of opening a little bit more for some of the rest of us. And then just getting to play with Theo, you know, he had won a tournament. He was a big blocker. He's, you know, playing internationally and stuff. And we had played in Huntington before that. It was kind of just like a one tournament deal because Rosie was hurt, and we did pretty well. And then, so yeah, I was pretty fired up going into Seattle. And then as far as the we actually, I don't know if you heard any of this. I don't know. We had kind of a weird situation where we were going to Germany that night after the Seattle tournament, and we were doing well enough in Seattle where it was going to be very, very close on missing or making our flight. And so we were kind of getting nervous about it, or at least I was. I'd never traveled like to an FIVB. So we had the idea of if we made the final, we zipped after we won the semi, we rushed to the airport and checked our bags in. And then just to make, because you have to do that, like it would have been cutting it pretty close after the final. So we checked our bags in, but rushed back to the tournament. And we actually had a lot of traffic, and the AVP was like, we were trying to make calls to see if we're going to be there on time. And so we show up, they like had a parking spot arranged for us when we finally got back, and it was like 10 or 15 minutes before the final. And so kind of just went out there, and the Crabs were already out there warming up. And I think actually I was like stressed out because of that, but it also like never gave me time to, like, I don't know, let it sink in and worry about playing on a final in front of, you know, on TV and all that stuff, because we were just so worried about like making it from the airport that it probably helped the nerves a little bit. And then same thing, as soon as we, you know, it was a good match. We were down 8-3 in the third and came back and won. And as soon as it was over, it was kind of like I had all this family and people there like wanting to like celebrate with us. And it was kind of like, sorry, I got to go. And we kind of raced to the airport. And it wasn't literally until maybe even on the way home from our FIVB trip that it kind of sunk in that, like, oh, yeah, like that was pretty cool. We won that tournament. And then I got to watch it on TV, like a replay, and I don't know, actually enjoy it a little bit.
And how was that tournament in Germany? Because I know that you was last year really the first. I know you played in Norseca as the Trevor, but was last year the first one where you were starting to play a little bit FIVB?
Yeah, and I was just like kind of AVP, or I'm sure like a lot of guys in the qualifier are like, you know, if you're nervous about spending all the money to go in Chicago, you know, Germany and Poland is even crazier. but it was kind of like I said, kind of having guys that I was playing with that kind of led me through it. Like playing with Theo was kind of part of the package deal that we would, he kind of said when he asked if I wanted to, you know, play more events, like, hey, can you commit to these ones? And it was, I'd never played FIVBs. Really, especially not an international one. And so I kind of just like said, yeah, sure. Thinking, I'll figure out how to get out of it if I have to later. And then, so it was kind of just like follow him. I mean, I show up and Rich Lamborn, our coach who came with us, asked me, oh, Billy, have you ever been to the Frankfurt airport before? And I was like, dude, I've never been to Europe before. it was all new to me. But same kind of thing. It was a tight schedule. We showed up. In Germany, we had to play the next day in the qualifier, and we ended up qualifying and getting second in our pool, making it out and stuff, and beating one of the, one of the Russian teams that went to the Olympics in the game to get in the qualifier. With both that and then in Poland next week, we were in the main draw too and got out of pool play. So that was my first, you know, experience in the FIB, and luckily enough, that made my money back.
What's the difference? AVP and FIVB, just mentally, physically, obviously, you know, the ball is different, but, like, you're not playing some guys who just play in CBVAs, qualifiers. You know, you're playing a Russian team who was in the Olympics in a qualifier.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's good, and I think you kind of have that idea where, I don't know, it's not fear of the unknown, but we're definitely more comfortable playing against guys we know, and so... You know, when you're a qualifier guy, the guys in the main draw feel like this whole other level. But, you know, and they're obviously really good. But once you kind of get in there and play with them a lot, like for me, I kind of know tendencies and you get comfortable playing them. And, you know, even though it's, you know, Phil Dalhauser, once you play him a few times, you know, you feel like you have a little bit of a chance. So it was definitely starting all over again with the FIVB, not knowing players' tendencies that much. And, you know, everybody's obviously really good, and there's definitely different styles of play where I feel like here, especially in CBVAs and qualifiers in the deep stands, there's a lot more shooting. And the FIVB, everybody's just crushing the ball from off the net and everything. So it's definitely more of a power game, which, you know, isn't my game so much. I mean, it was impressive, but, I mean, I guess it works both ways because the guys didn't know me at all, so my – really high line shot worked a lot too. So,
and did that kind of give you a boost of confidence? I mean, not that you really needed it after winning in Seattle, but then, you know, you qualify in Germany and you also beat the Canadian Olympic team, the number one team, Jackson and Chalk. So, you know, in just 2 weeks or just a couple days, really, you won your first AVP. Then you qualified for your first FIVB, you beat a Russian Olympic team, you beat a Canadian Olympic team. And was that just kind of a whirlwind for you?
Yeah, it was definitely happening so fast. And you're so concerned about, like I said, the next match that you're not really even, like, taking it all in, like, kind of the accomplishments, which is probably good. You know, you don't want to dwell on it too much. But it's definitely a confidence builder, like having played at that level and even just being around that level and watching those guys play and then coming back to the AVP. I always thought, and I mean, it definitely showed me that what an advantage it is to be one of those teams that's lucky enough to play internationally because, you know, before, like, I would play in a tournament, an AVP on a certain weekend, and then it's like, oh, there's another AVP in, like, 3 weeks or a month away. And then everybody else has been, you know, our top teams get to be playing tournaments during that time and getting better and playing against the best competition. So, I mean, instead of playing 6 or 7 tournaments a year, you're playing 15, and, you're, you know, it's definitely going to separate you from those guys who aren't able to do that.
And has playing international changed your goals at all? Are you starting to look at, you know, Tokyo 2020 and kind of leveraging your international points, saying, you know, if I'm automatic main draw, by the time the next qualification starts, you know, I might be in pretty good shape?
I go back and forth. Sometimes, you know, if you have a good tournament, and you're like, dude, I could do this. Yeah, I mean, Haydn, these guys will all be done by the time they're like, you kind of compare yourself to some of the other, I guess, defender Americans that would be around that spot, like Mayer or Taylor or Crabb or Nick. I mean, like, oh, there's a chance I could be in that mix. And then other times you see some of the, you know, you have a bad tournament and you see some of the level internationally and you're like, dude, I should never be playing this sport. So it definitely goes back and forth. I feel like if I'm playing with somebody that I feel we can do well with, then I'll give it a shot. Otherwise, I mean, I'll be happy to play VPs and try to do well there. I mean, wherever I can kind of, I don't know, be pushing myself to do well. And there's plenty of really good teams. And even if you don't play internationally, there's so much you can, you know, accomplish and challenge yourself just domestically too.
And I know that, like you said, the international game is a little bit different. It's more of a power game. Did you start to modify your own game at all based on what you had seen internationally?
Definitely hand set a little bit more, I think, at the time because they don't call as much and you kind of just jack that ball up. I mean, if I could hit harder, I would. But I think it's more like, and I don't know if I just kind of got to play with what you have. And so, you know, I try to hit high and do my thing here and there, but I definitely do more of a mix it up game. I don't have the shoulder just to be hitting over blockers like a lot of guys do. But with that international ball, I think the float serve is definitely more of a factor because the ball sucks the pass float serve. And so that might be something I would use more internationally than domestically.
And now you've been playing your first AVP was in 2004. You know, it's now 2016. You've been on tour for a while. How have you seen the AVP change? Or has it changed? Like, how has the travel as a game changed since you first started playing?
Let's see. I think I came in after the rule changes happened, so there were always big blockers. I think that became even more and more of a thing is like find the biggest guy you can. And I think now it's almost starting to slide the other way where you see guys like the Crabs or guys internationally like Latvia that, you know, get away with two just like good volleyball players. And so I don't know, I can see that being a change where maybe, you know, serve and pass and some of like the skill stuff is kind of sliding back to be more of a important thing than just having, you know, a 7-foot guy. As far as culturally, I feel like when I first started playing, it was definitely on the AVP, definitely a business because there was so much money involved where guys were a little more cutthroat. I think once the money left for those years, it was definitely more of a, I don't know, a bonding thing of shared misery where everybody's like in the same situation, like having to share hotel rooms, and I don't know, I think it definitely took some of the egos out of the sport, but now that AVP is doing better and better, those are coming back too.
Right, as far as the future of the game goes, we have, you know, the Sanyin was implemented at the college level and it's booming, which is kind of having a nice trickle down effect at the youth level. But as far as guys go, you know, guys don't have the college game or anything, so where do you see the future of the sport? Is it going to kind of remain under the stigma, you know, that it's a girl sport?
Probably. I think, like, I mean, until your book comes out and sells millions of copies, I think everybody's going to look at beach volleyball as what we see in commercials of, like, you know, 6-on-7, just setting the ball back and forth. I don't know. I mean, Olympics is great once every 4 years, and people kind of see that a little bit, but I mean, I don't know. I think the AVP would have an even bigger role in changing America's perceptions than, you know, some international event once every 4 years. I'd like to see volleyball be huge for guys. It is definitely exciting what the women's college game has done. And I know Janelle, my wife, playing, like, it's way tougher for them. Like, that's a nasty qualifier. You know, you're playing, so you're losing to some, like, high school or college girls because they're really good already. Which on the guy side, we, you know, that's a little rare that you're, you know, having to, you know, I don't know, worry about playing some college kid. Yeah, and I think one thing that separated beach volleyball players for a long time is just perseverance and, I don't know, having your act together without a coach telling you what to do and telling you to go lift and buying plane tickets for you. And so I think it's always going to be hard for players to make the commitment to play professionally beach. And it's what's going to separate it. It's always going to be those guys that are self-sufficient, that can get themselves out practicing, that can get themselves to the gym, that can, you know, take those risks of having a part-time job and having roommates and still traveling. But, you know, those guys are going to do well. It's just not going to be as easy as having a set program where a coach says, hey, show up here. This is all you got to do.
And now, do you have like a timeline of how long you want to be playing the game for, or is it just kind of like the Tom Brady mindset where, you know, I'll play until I suck, basically?
I think I'll definitely be playing volleyball long past the time I suck. Just because I would love it for to kind of let my parents kind of have it as a family sport. I'd love to still be playing with friends and stuff if we live somewhere close to California. But as far as competing AVP, I think it's kind of a year-by-year process. Luckily enough, I've been, like, pretty healthy. And, I don't know, maybe my style of play is pretty low impact. And so I'd like to be able to be like a Hayden or somebody that's still playing when they're 40 or so.
Now, you grew up in California, and, you know, when I was living in Florida, pretty much everyone said, oh, you know, if you're going to take it serious, you pretty much have to live in California. And I came out here, you know, for sports writing, but, you know, I can definitely see the impact that living out here has. So how important is it, you know, for players, like, if you're going to take it serious and you want to play on the AVP and maybe even international, how important is it to be in or at least around California?
I mean, I can think of maybe one team that's not here, you know. Yeah, and, like, it works for them because they, you know, you have a built-in partner with your brother. But, I mean, to be solo somewhere else, I don't even know how you find a partner. You know, you can't really practice through Skype. So I think, to be here, I'm always definitely impressed with what they're able to do. So it is doable, you know, if you find another guy in whatever state you live, you can train on your own or have your dad serve you or whatever they do. Like, it's definitely impressive. But, you know, I don't know, maybe they'd be better if they were here too. But just, you know, everybody lives around Huntington or Hermosa, and the amount of high-level training and just availability with partnerships and, I don't know, I mean, it's volleyball. Yeah, definitely California is kind of where it's at for volleyball. And I mean, it's hard. I'm sure you can make it happen somewhere else, but it'd be a lot harder and you might be better having come out here. Yeah, I mean, ideally you're one of the worst guys in your practice group, you know.
Right.
And if you're in California, that's kind of a possibility, or maybe that's a little tougher somewhere else. And then, I mean, you're also able to practice year-round. Like, it's December and I'm practicing tomorrow morning. You know, that's kind of tough to do in Maryland, maybe, or somewhere else.
For sure. There's snow on the ground back home for me.
A huge thanks to Billy Allen for joining me on the Paper Courts podcast, and a huge thanks to all of you listeners. Don't forget to download it and give us a nice review on iTunes. We appreciate it. See y'all next week.